KBLULP in Logan. My name is Richard Arlen Blake, and I'd like to welcome you all back to the next episode of Ballad of Shenish Folklore Now. In the first episode of my show, I asked a question, what is folklore? On that episode, I answered it with Alan Dunday's long list explanation that folklore is folk music, folk tales, folk dance, jokes, riddles, and a bunch of other things. Then I also went into Lynn McNeil's very short explanation, definition of informal traditional culture. The question about folklore, the answers that people give, can lead to a long discussion in folklore definitions and discussions. And it's really easy to answer any questions about what is folklore. Now, I have another question for you. What is folk music? How do you define it? I discussed how you might be able to say that something is folklore if you could see it. But could you say the same thing when it comes to folk music? Well, let's have a look at a few things here and see if we can answer that. If we jump to the Merriam-Webster's dictionary under the topic folk music, what you get is the traditional music of the people in a country or region. Okay, that's pretty simple, isn't it? What about folk music that originates in a place and moves to another place and then goes through its own transformations and so forth? Just getting from a certain region, a certain place, that is not easily defined either. And so I'm going to head off into another direction. In the Folklore Encyclopedia, edited by Thomas A. Green, this is how the many-paragraph definition begins. This is the first paragraph. So folk music is tunes sung with or without verbal text or played on instruments in folkloric performance settings. Contemporary perspectives stress the idea that such music, whatever its origin and previous usage, can be considered folk music when its use is primarily for the enjoyment of performers and listeners in non-commercial settings. This definition, like many recent definitions of folklore in general, stresses behaviors in the context, in particular those that are more informal than formal, that exist outside performance settings typically associated with popular and elite or art music in Western cultures. Okay, a bit long-winded, but trust me, it's a lot shorter than the whole shebang that it had in that encyclopedia. But it stresses the fact that it's for the enjoyment of performers and listeners alike. Most music performances are for the enjoyment of performers and listeners alike. So how would you think about those lines if you were going to go to, say, a Metallica concert? Wouldn't that be folk music since there people are there to enjoy themselves? And I'll bet you the Metallica people are enjoying themselves as well. I don't know, maybe just the adulation, but I'm assuming they enjoy singing. Well, I'm forced to go to another place then where I don't always encourage people to go when they want actual factual details about something, and that is Wikipedia. Due to the nature of Wikipedia, I actually have something that I'm going to have on another show that goes into the depths of Wikipedia and its cultural aspects. But here I want to read a couple things about what the folk music entry in Wikipedia says. If you scroll down a ways, what I saw was this. There are a couple bullet points, and the first one says, it was transmitted through oral tradition. Okay, music by its definition is oral when people are singing, but every song is, in that case, is transmitted by oral tradition. Are they saying that it's not written down first? Is the only kind of folk musician someone who's an ear musician and can just sit down and strum the guitar and pull up a tune? I doubt that it's that simple. And I personally hold that it is not. All right, the next bullet point says, the music was often related to national culture. That is certainly the case when it comes to Irish music, Scottish music, people playing the bagpipes, people playing fiddles, or people playing different kinds of instruments in a certain manner that are distinct for a specific nationality or specific people. However, a lot of times those things are borrowed from other cultures and then integrated into another culture. But that doesn't necessarily mean that it's not that culture's usage, but it does kind of put a little bit of a flair into this part of the definition of national culture. Then they commemorate historical and personal events. There are certainly quite a few songs out there that commemorate personal and historical events. The folk music that you come across by different Irish singers, they sing woefully about certain tragedies that happened in Ireland. There are some songs that commemorate the sinking of a ship. I already told you about a song that dealt with the haunting of a ship due to its sinking of another one. So these are commemorating those events. However, quite a few songs by regular singers are actually telling a story commemorating an event as well. You can argue that folk music is distinct in the fact that that is always the case when it comes to singing folk songs. And then songs have been performed by custom over long periods of time. This little bit I have an issue with more than the others because does the fact that someone created that song last week, a month ago, a year ago, mean that it is not folk music simply because it hasn't been around a long time or it hasn't passed through the mouths of four or five singers? Is it necessarily, well, there's also the explanation of, well, a lot of times it has an unknown author. But in the current day and age, just because something is recent and because something is no, it has a known author, that does not mean it is not folk music. With the folk music, a lot of people sing Elvis, a lot of people sing things by the Bee Gees that are definitely a few years old and they have been passed on to other people who are singing it. Does the transferring it from one singer to another then make it folk music? Is that a prerequisite? And of course, that's probably not the case if you go by my understanding that someone's personal account of an event, like if they're going to sing about a tragedy that happened to them in their life earlier and they sing about it and it's something they kind of strummed up on their guitar, that's just as much folk music as something with an unknown author that's over 100 years old. There's an event that happens every year in January in Elko, Nevada, called the Cowboy Poetry Festival, which is largely a country music type festival. And it's run through the Folklife Center in Elko, Nevada. A lot of times one might think, these people, this is a formal setting, these people have written all these things, people are singing other people's songs that aren't really fancy or whatever, and it might be for enjoyment, but it's also commercial. Therefore, why is this a folk festival as opposed to other things that have commercial intent and are formally organized by, say, government agencies? Then I'll just leave it at that. In the rest of this podcast, I'm going to be playing you three songs, and maybe I'll be playing you a fourth one, time permitting, which are all associated with the British Isles, basically because I really like that region and a lot of the music that come from that region of the world. Two of them deal with similar topics. One of them deals with the outcome of a battle that took place in Scotland, and another one deals with a plea to a king who was exiled to return and free Ireland from the oppressor. Those two I'm going to talk about, and then the third song is something that's a bit different, and I'm going to ask you to contemplate what you think of that song. So the first song I'm going to play to you is The Braes of Killiecrankie, and this song originated in the Scots language, which I have told you about before. And so some of this stuff might be hard for you to understand everything, but you'll get the gist of the song, I'm pretty sure. And it's based on a poem by Robert Burns, who is one of the most famous Scots writers who've come down to us. So let us play this song, and then we'll go over it to analyze its significant parts.
And ye had been what I hae been, ye wadna been sae kind to you. And ye had seen what I hae seen on the brace, O Kerry Crankio. I fought at land, I fought at sea, at home I fought my auntie, but I met the devil, and Dundee on the brace, O Kerry Crankio. What I hae been, ye wadna been sae canty, oh, and ye had seen what I hae seen on the braes o' Kerry Cranky, oh. The bold pit car fell way afar, and clavers got a clanky, oh, and I had fed on a praise O Kerry Cranky, oh. And ye had been what I hae been, ye wadna been sae canty, oh. And ye had seen what I hae seen on the praise O Kerry Cranky, oh. O Fy Mackay, what got ye lie in the bush o' yon banky, oh. Ye'd better kissed King Willie's loaf than come by Kerry Cranky, oh. There's nae shame, there's nae shame, there's nae shame to swanky, oh. A sore slays on a Kerry Cranky, oh. And ye had been what I hae been, ye wadna been sae canty, oh. And ye had seen what I hae seen on the braes o' Kerry Cranky, oh.
All right, so this isn't my favorite version of this song. I really like this song, but I could not find the one that I like the best. This one is sung by a band named The Corys. And my favorite one was actually sung by a woman. I saw it on a YouTube video where she was in a pub. She was singing the song. And she was doing the Scots accent really strongly. And so the Scots could really be determined there. And I just loved it. I went back. I went everywhere trying to find it. But it is just not on YouTube anymore. I did not write down the name of the woman, so unfortunately I have no idea what her name is. But this version by the Corys is pretty good as well. And just to give you a little bit of a historical background here, this song is about what happened to one particular soldier who was fighting in the Jacobite Wars and who fought at the battle near Killiecrankie. And Killiecrankie is up there in the Highlands. The people there, the Jacobites, were defeated by the people of William of Orange. They were driven out, and this particular person was just really devastated that the army had been defeated. So it's really, you know, it's a sad story, but it's under the guise of singing to someone else saying, you're lucky you were not at the Battle of Killiecrankie.
Now, what I'd like to do is what I will call a folk dissection of this song. I want to delve into it and pull out the elements of what Wikipedia says are the important elements of the song. So I read you off the bullet points of what Wikipedia has to say, and I'm going to go over each of those four things. So first, it was transmitted through oral tradition. Well, as I'm sure you already know, the song was written by Robert Burns. It was written out as a poem. It has been passed down from generation to generation as a poem. And of course, many people have decided to take those words and put them into verse and put them into music. So definitely we see that the transmission is orally. Many people have picked it up. You can argue that it was written down, but poetry is made to be read out loud. Therefore, it is an oral tradition. The issue then we also have to consider is there's a whole bunch of different versions of this song. The whole bunch of people have sung this song. Therefore, it is definitely something that is a traditional song now, even though we do know who the author of this particular poem is.
The next thing is the music was often related to national culture. Like I said, this is Scots, this is Scotland. Killiecrankie is in Scotland, so definitely it is of natural cultural significance. Then number three, they commemorate historical and personal events. A guy recording his own personal experience to someone else at the Battle of Killiecrankie, and he was lucky to survive. That's your historical event. Then the songs have been performed by custom over a long period of time. Like I said, this poem is over 200 years old. It has been put to music several times, and there are a few different versions of the song, basically because one or two of the stanzas were fiddled with in order to suit the purposes of the person singing the song. And we therefore see several versions coming down through the ages. Following those guidelines, this song is definitely a folk song. Whatever you think, you know, this is a folk song, yay. The next song that I'm going to talk about here is one named Mogilimer. Now, this song is actually in the Irish Gaelic language. I know a bit of the Irish Gaelic language, and of course I went and learned the translations and everything of this particular song, because I really like the way it sounds. It's beautiful. And it does carry a nice message. It's a plea to Bonnie Prince Charlie, Charles Stuart, who was driven out of Scotland and Britain, along with his father, who was James II. And then, of course, he tried to come back and regain his throne, and he was kicked out. But the Irish want Bonnie Prince Charlie to come back and rescue them from the evil clutches of the Protestant overlords who had taken over under the leadership of William of Orange. So William of Orange came and pretty much destroyed all presumptions of Irish national independence. And the Irish feel that only Bonnie Prince Charlie can come and rescue them. Here's the song, and then after we're done with this, we'll talk about the significance of the words here.
Sesh ka sork a crochet y'all.
So before my folk analysis here, I'm sure all of you were thinking, that song was in Irish Gaelic, how the heck are we supposed to know what the heck is going on and make this analysis? Right after I had decided to pull this song up, I decided to look quickly online to see if I can find a website where it would translate this song for us. And I'll read quickly a couple of the stanzas here. And keep in mind that the way this is written is not a word-for-word translation, because if you did do a word-for-word translation, it would not sound as harmonic and nice. But essentially, this is a song about the goddess Era calling on Bonnie Prince Charlie to come save Ireland. Here's the first couple stanzas in the English. So, for some short time I was a gentle maiden, now I am spent, worn-out widow. My darling has crossed the wild waves, gone far away. He's my hero, my darling, dashing darling. He's my Caesar, dashing darling. I know no rest, but only sorrow, since he went far away, my darling. Every day I am constantly sad. I weep bitterly and shed many tears, because our lively young man has left us. And alas, we hear no news from him. And then, of course, it goes back into the chorus of, he is my hero, my dashing darling. So that's basically the gist of the song. The hero is Bonnie Prince Charlie. He has left Ireland to go overseas and left Ireland to fend for herself. And they want Bonnie Prince Charlie to come back and alleviate their sorrow. Having said that, let's do our folk analysis on this song as well. First question, it was transmitted through oral tradition. This particular song, it was written in the 18th century. It was a lament written by, it was a lament written down right after the event of Bonnie Prince Charlie leaving. And there are a couple different versions that have come down to us one at a time. I was trying to find the original author, but I don't have it written down here, but some of those Irish names are hard to pronounce. Anyways, this was first written down right after the failed rebellion. They want Prince Charlie to come back. Okay, and there have been several versions, several people singing the song and changing it as they go. So, number one, it was transmitted through oral tradition. That's how music is transmitted generally, and especially here, because we only hear the oral part. We don't sit and read music most of the time. Then the music was often related to national culture. The national culture is Ireland, of course. The Irish who's calling upon an English king who got kicked out. But yeah, that's of national culture. And it follows a kind of music trend that is common in Ireland at the time. And they commemorate historical and personal events. Okay, the Irish lost the Battle of the Boyne, and this is the lament about it. The song has been performed by custom over a long period of time. Like I said, it goes back into the 18th century. It's been over two centuries. So this is a folk song. It fulfills all of the requirements. Then there is one more song that I want you to listen to, and we are going to do another folk analysis of it. And that song is called On the Shores of the Swilly. And here now I will play that for you. I do really love that song. It has a lot of depth. It has a lot of meaning to it. The song was sung by Sinead O'Connor, who I think is a singer that many people are familiar with. She sings a lot of other songs, but here I like, this is probably the best song that I think that she sings. I just like the way she works it. This song was written by a composer named Phil Coulter. Now, Phil Coulter is from Derry in Northern Ireland. This was a song that is actually personal to him. When he was a child, he grew up with his sister.
to children at play, the king of the castle, the queen of the maze. They're growing up together, and they have families of their own as they get older. And then he watched as the body rolled in from the tide. That is just heartbreaking and totally personal. The person who was his best friend growing up, his sister, has died in the Swilly. She drowns in the inlet there that goes from the Atlantic Ocean. It's called Lough Swilly. So, is this a folk song? This is a really nice, sweet song. It memorializes an event, and it's truly captivating in its way. But let's have a look. So, it has transmitted through oral tradition. Like I said, this was written down and composed in the earlier part of this decade, and so it really just barely came into existence as far as music goes. One has to think, okay, that probably isn't how you would describe this song. It has been sung by one or two other people, but only this one with Sinead O'Connor has really been recorded. It just has not been around long enough. The music was often related to a national culture. This might not quite fit into what you could call Irish music. It's kind of similar to a few other things, but I found it on an album called Celtic Circle that involves music from several different places, not just Ireland, but from Scotland and Wales and Southern Britain and other places that feel like they have a Celtic theme to themselves. And so, okay, it does represent a culture, so I can kind of see that national, or the Celts a national culture? Yeah, probably not, but I'm not going to get nitpicky there. It commemorates a historical and personal event, the death of his sister, a very tragic event, and the song has been performed by custom over a long period of time. It has not been a long period of time. Perhaps in the future, as it continues on, other people will sing it. It'll show up on other albums with other singers. But this particular song is copyrighted with Phil Coulter, so anyone who does it is going to have permission of whoever owns the copyright there. So this is probably not a folk song, but that doesn't mean it is not a great song and it's not of Irish extraction and Irish understanding of things. I was thinking of playing another song for you that to analyze. It's called Loch Lomond, or The Way to Loch Lomond. It's that song that has the line, "You take the high road and I'll take the low road and I'll get to Scotland before you." It has a lot of meaning to it other than what it might immediately convey to you with those words. And I think I might actually start the next episode with that at the beginning of the episode. But then I will go into what I wanted to do with Wikipedia and with commercials, because I felt that that would be an interesting way to go with another episode. Saying that, then, I would like to close this episode of Ballad Is Shanish by thanking all of you for coming in and listening in. It's always great to be able to do these particular things. I love just about all aspects of folklore, and I just keep looking for more different areas in which to study. And of course, if you want to get involved, my email address is folklorenow33@gmail.com. Give me a line if there's anything you'd like me to talk about, and I'll see you next time on Ballad Is Shanish or Folklore Now.